Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Done and dusted at the ATP Finals. We have our beers. Catherine's got us a new kind of beer, which apparently in the Bricklayers' Arms is always off. But
yeah, because Fulham keep losing.
Right.
Bricklayers' Arms runs out of beer every time Fulham lose.
Oh, sorry, okay. I just need to be drowned.
So anyway, fortunately here at the ATP Finals, it isn't off, and we've got three of them. However, there are some sorrows that need to be drowned here as well. Not at this particular table, but walking around the O2 Arena. I mean, I'm not laughing at you, Roger Federer fans.
We just got doorstepped by a...
We've been doorstepped a few times.
We just got doorstepped on our way to meet Matt at the place where they give out the free beers.
Yeah.
By a very lovely podcast listener.
Yeah.
And David made chit-chat and he said, oh, you're watching Federer team? He said, who are you supporting? He said, oh... I mean, I was worried for the blokes... sort of happiness and sanity.
He
said, oh, sort of supporting Federer because you've got to, really, haven't you? Don't know how long he's going to be around.
I know, and he sort of walked up, he walked off into the distance just looking so down.
Yeah,
and
it was sort of pathos.
I was up at mid... If you haven't heard the result, folks, Federer lost 7-5, 7-5 to Dominic Thiem. More of that later. I was in the commentary box and looking out. I'd done the first set and I was looking out over the court. And a few seats in front of me, there were two rows full of Federer fans, and they'd got his picture on draped over the railings and all this sort of stuff. And there was this one sight of this one woman who, I would say she's in her 60s, and she was rolling up a poster which said, Federer, always our number one. And she rolled it up and put it back in her bag. And that was that. And that sort of summed up the night, I felt, from a Roger Federer perspective. Just didn't happen.
Catherine doesn't know what to say about the poster imagery.
A logger somewhere is clipping up that footage and marking it as save for Federer retirement VT.
Dear.
More than anyone else still, I think, Federer losing... seems to have this kind of impact on tennis.
Depressive effect.
People get really depressed by it.
Well, ahead of the match, the doubles match this evening was really long, and I was caught in the corridor, unable to get into the stadium for my commentary, which was slightly nerve-wracking, ahead of Federer. And there were little groups of Federer fans who were all just sort of passing the time of day with each other, walking past each other and high-fiving and saying, go on, Roger, you know.
I think what surprised me, and maybe it's naive to still be at all surprised by the effect that Roger Federer has on people and on tennis fans, but I was a little surprised that people weren't a bit more swept up in Dominic Thiem and the tennis that he played and the performance that he put in.
Awesome tonight.
So good. And I was watching it and I was thinking, Thiem is playing really well here, but what he's not having to do is redline. He's playing kind of within himself, and that's good enough to probably beat Federer tonight. But Federer was okay, not awful, wasn't as bad as he was against Nishikori in the first match last year here.
Shudder.
There was a little flashback in the first game where he duffed a couple of volleys and got broken. I thought, oh, here we go again. But overall, it was kind of 6-7 out of 10 probably for Federer. There was enough good stuff.
I thought he was better than that. But it's quite interesting to read a player's performance from where you sit. You were up in the press seats up high, weren't you, Matt?
Admittedly, I was in the gods, yes.
Yeah, I was commentating, which I find always slightly skews my view of a match. And Catherine was in the studio. What did you think of his performance?
Yeah, 6 or 7.
I think six or seven for Federer, there's good stuff in there.
Yeah, yeah, but a 6 or 7, and yet I never really felt like he had the match by the scruff of the neck. I never really felt a turning point here. Federer's figured it out. He's got it. It always felt a little bit like he was hanging in there and he couldn't afford to drop that level.
That's a good way of putting it. It felt to me like the good tennis that he was playing was necessary to even keep it respectable tonight. He was having to react to Dominic Thiem's missiles.
And I found it interesting how much Dominic Thiem was up at the net, because he's not a great volleyer. He doesn't have natural feel at all. Daniela suggested he needed some lessons from Mladenovic in the volleying department.
Tennis's power couple had a good day.
Exactly. But that doesn't mean it's not a good tactic to be there, because it's a disruption tactic. And obviously, if your approach is good enough, you're more often than not having to hit a particularly skillful volley to finish off the point. I thought it was, despite him not being one of the world's great volleyers, a good tactic to get himself up to the net. And yes, Federer was pulling off, you know, I can think of a few really cracking passing shots he pulled off, but without actually seeing the stats, I suspect that Dominic Thiem won the majority of the points while he was up at the net, and it contributed to a general complexion of Federer just never really finding a rhythm or getting a foothold in that match.
I think, for me, the thing that struck me about Federer's performance was his footwork. I thought looked a little sloppy, a little flat. Normally,
Danny and Greg said exactly the same.
And the thing is, normally his footwork is so precise. I think when it's slightly off, it's really obvious. It looks like he's really late to the ball.
They thought particularly out on the forehand side.
Yeah, and that, I think, is that's his tell a bit, Federer, when he's not moving so well. He doesn't quite move so well to the forehand. And it's also, I think I've spoken before about Federer's stubbornness being both one of his best assets when he's on, because he refuses to budge from his game plan and he just keeps coming with it, and players can't cope. It's kind of overwhelming because he just keeps doing the same thing. But when it's off, when his game's a bit off, his stubbornness is a vice, because he doesn't necessarily change it up that much. Like, I'm thinking today specifically about his just refusal to budge from the baseline against Thiem, who's firing these arrows at him, kind of overwhelming him with power. Federer was having to half volley them all the time, and he's so good at that, he gets away with it a lot of the time, but also he makes quite a lot of errors.
Well, he thought he was going to rush Thiem into error, didn't he? Thought he could deflect balls using Thiem's pace on the half volley, rush him, and that Thiem would miss. And there were a few times when he would get him on the run and Thiem would still come out with a sizzler that doesn't really matter what you do against.
It's too hard. You can't control that ball because it's hit at you so hard.
In Matt's freaking me out with his level of tennis knowledge and perception news for the day, we should probably give an assist for the win to Moritz Thiem.
Yes.
Who Matt spotted while we were sat courtside recording our other podcast of the day.
Yeah, if you want another podcast, if you don't like this one, there's a Fed Cup one that we recorded before Federer against Thiem.
While Dominic Thiem, or shortly before Dominic Thiem, came out to warm up for his night session match. And from the far side of the court, a young-looking person, sort of a shorter version, actually not a shorter version of Dominic Thiem, he looked nothing like Dominic Thiem. This bloke walked out with a racket bag, and Matt leaned over and said, "Is that Moritz Thiem, younger brother of Dominic Thiem?" And lo and behold, it was. So he's obviously brought him here as his hitting partner.
Well, Moritz Thiem's Wikipedia page describes him as an Austrian tennis player, not brother of Austrian tennis player. So he's a tennis player in his own right.
We witnessed him hitting tennis balls with a tennis racket today. So if that's...
eventually,
we weren't overly impressed, well, were we?
I mean, for the first 10 minutes, it was rubbish.
Yeah.
And the first 10 minutes, I thought, Dominic Thiem's in massive trouble here. He can't play. Look at him. What's the matter with him?
Him reading too much into practice.
Yeah, family loyalty can go too far, Dominic.
Yeah. But then it was clearly they were just loosening the arms up, because suddenly after about 10 to 15 minutes, around about the point that the music comes on in the podcast, in the stadium, they suddenly started to let rip with these, with these backhands.
Dominic did.
Mm. Well, the other bloke was having a go, but it's
he was having a go.
Most of his weren't going in the courts, but it's never stopped me. But what I liked...
Do you think he edits his own Wikipedia page?
Don't we all do that? Do you think tennis players...
Hang on, you have to have a Wikipedia page to be able to edit it.
Yeah, well...
There are some great tennis trolls on Wikipedia pages, or there have been. The last line of Tim Henman's... Wikipedia biog used to be Tim was signed up for a BBC chat show called Let's Talk with Tim. There was axe after episode one. I think I've got a screenshot of that somewhere.
Yeah, and edited by C.W.
Oi!
No.
Edited by G. Rzedzki.
What I liked about Dominic Thiem's performance tonight, and we talked about it ahead of this tournament, is we wanted Thiem to show up.
Mm.
Now, admittedly, having said that, I then was slightly taken aback by the fact that he got a 4-2 head-to-head against Federer, and I'm thinking, here I am saying that Thiem doesn't show up against Federer, and that's not fair, because he's beaten him twice, 2 out of 2 this year, now 3 out of 3. But here, I really thought there was a chance that he might go into his shell, which he has. I mean,
he did here last year.
3 years in a row, he's lost his first round robin match here. He's never reached the semi-finals. And I thought, no, we've talked about Thiem when he won Vienna and when he's done various things this year as having just matured and decided, right, I'm one of the lads now, and I'm not having it. I'm not having any of you people pushing me around anymore. And that's what we saw in that first set today. He came out and he said, Roger Federer, don't care. Don't care what you've done in the game, mate. It's about this rectangle right here, this ball, this racket, and it's you and me. All right? Your Federer fans won't help you now. John Burko is in the crowd. And he needs to just calm it down a bit, really, doesn't he?
This is a man that self-published a book, a sort of fan novella about Roger Federer. Mark Petchy was sent down to, quote, grab a couple of questions with John Burko, and 18 minutes later...
I think he only asked three questions.
Halfway through his life story.
He's a talker.
Catherine, we're going to run the John Burko interview. We've edited it down. It's only 12 minutes.
So anyway, he's...
Great, we give the people what they want.
Look, he's an enthusiast for Roger Federer, which many are, and many who are listening to this right now are, indeed. But I like the fact that Dominic Thiem didn't give a stuff about any of that tonight. And he just came out and he took him on and he took him out.
And this was, you know, he had that 4-2 record against Federer going into this match. There were perhaps a couple of little caveats to that.
Well, Dominic Thiem thought there were big caveats to that, because I asked him about that record pre-tournament and he said, I don't really count Indian Wells because it basically plays like a clay court.
And then two of those were on clay, actual clay.
Yeah.
And then the other one was in Stuttgart on grass, rather oddly. But when Federer, it was that year when he was just about to have his knee surgery and he wasn't right over that whole grass court swing. But, you know, you compare this Thiem performance to the one against Federer in the group stages last year, and it's night and day. He was so much better today. And that's just a demonstration of the evolution he's undergone in the last year, really.
I hereby forgive Dominic Thiem for putting me through Thiem versus Nishikori Ota Arena 2018, which is the worst tennis match I've ever seen live.
I mean, she's not exaggerating.
No. Oh, no, I've heard that line. And she's seen us play live.
Yeah, that is true. It's the best had drama,
an
edge.
Best compliment I've ever had. The match you reference, isn't that one the one where you said that they don't appear to have strings in their racket?
Yeah, that yeah, that was Federer Nishikori.
Federer Nishikori. Yeah.
How many stinkers were there?
There were so
Nishikori
many bad
participated
matches.
Participated in
year.
Some stinkers. Yeah. I mean, he won that particular stinker.
Yes.
In fact, I think he won the stinker against Team as well. Oh, he won some stinkers.
Yeah.
There was
stinker specialist.
There was a great crowd comment I heard from up in the gods after Federer lost his opening service game. Someone shouted out, "Alexa, turn Roger on."
Oh, it's so 2019.
I thought it was amazing.
That's very good.
What sophisticated bants.
Yes. Even, and it, fortunately, it's just about relatable enough for me to understand it. I don't need the Urban Dictionary or anything. I did use the Urban Dictionary today, incidentally, for the word boomer. Do you know what the word boomer?
Yeah, that has been going around.
Yeah. I got called a boomer because I was questioning the validity and legitimacy of the boxing match between the YouTubers. What were they, what's their name?
KSI.
Yeah, and Logan something. I mean, who
Logan
are these
Paul.
People? Who are these people? If you listen to them and watch them, whatever. Gee. Anyway. So I got called a boomer because I was being... Apparently it's an old person who doesn't understand anything that the young people
boomer?
Are doing.
Is it baby boomer?
Yeah. That's what I am, apparently. So anyway.
I think my parents are baby boomers. I think you're clear of that.
Oh, good. Okay. Right, I'll take that. So we've got now the two winners of the two group matches, because earlier today Novak Djokovic was absolutely emphatic against Matteo Berrettini. The story of this match is that, quite similarly to Roberts against Law, it was two games all and nice and competitive in the first set. And I was having a meeting with somebody who works in BBC TV, and he said, I was really worried in the first two games that this was just going to be a really quick match because, you know, it was one love 30.
There's been a lot of comments over the last few days that haven't aged well.
Yeah, and suddenly it was two all, and we're both sitting there thinking, oh, it's quite good, this,
it's
isn't
on.
It?
It's on,
you know,
folks.
It's on. So anyway, we had a little chit-chat, and about half an hour later, it was 6-2, 4-love. And Djokovic just took him to the cleaners. What happened? I mean, for those that saw the match, why was this so one-sided? 6-2, 6-1 against Matteo Berrettini, who, aside from playing against Roger Federer at Wimbledon, has been competitive against everybody.
To borrow Matt's analysis, which I now apply a version of to every single match that I watch, Berrettini played shots, he didn't play points. And I felt like he played a lot of shots where he was irritated
shots.
That they didn't turn out to be winners. He did the thing that you and I do, David, of hitting one sort of decentish shot and being irritated that it comes back.
Yeah. Todd Woodbridge said
that's
in commentary,
a nothing
didn't he?
Against Djokovic.
Todd Woodbridge said in commentary at the Fed Cup, you know, don't stand there and admire your shots, which, yeah, I'm definitely guilty of that, even when they're not very good.
It's the great thing about golf.
Until they hit the tree.
Yes.
And then you feel differently.
But Djokovic was very good.
Yeah, I think it was one of those performances where to get such a discrepancy in the scoreline, you clearly needed one of the players to be brilliant and one of them to be well off their game. I mean, one of the more alarming stats I've ever seen about Berrettini was that if you include double faults, he hit as many unforced errors as he won points in the match. Which is, I can't remember really seeing a stat like that before. That's really bad.
It was really bad, wasn't it? And he was so bamboozled by the experience that he forgot where the exit to the court was and walked to the wrong corner. And that was, again, that was one of those sort of just really poignant
shots. When he was walking off
like
the court?
The folding away of the flag.
He didn't know how to get off the court?
Well, he walked to the wrong bit and somebody had to come over and go, "Oh, Matteo, it's over there. You've got to now walk back past Djokovic." He looked so dazed.
I'm sorry, I'm not laughing with you, Matteo. I'm laughing.
He had a hint of a chuckle.
I mean, bless him. He seems like a really nice bloke, doesn't he?
He is.
His press conference transcript was ever so jovial in the face of this defeat.
Yeah, he said, I played a really good match. Well, not really good. Okay,
not,
match.
Not even good.
No. But, I mean, Djokovic was
Hang on a second. Did he think that was a good match? I like the bloke, but I'm alarmed if he thinks that was a good match.
No, I think it was lost in translation.
Yeah. Oh. I think he was talking about he was trying to see the positives of having got here and played and
won, for an hour and 3 minutes.
Won three games.
But his biggest one of his biggest weapons is his serve. And Djokovic was just putting it back on his toes all the time.
He's so bloody good at that.
It's unbelievable how he does that.
Yeah.
Like,
it's a line and length, isn't it? Always.
Like they brought up a graphic on Prime that, you know, like 60% of his returns were basically at Berrettini's feet. I mean, how are you supposed to do anything off that?
I think within tennis circles now, he's getting the respect for being the greatest returner in the game possibly ever that perhaps he doesn't get on a wider sphere. For instance, if somebody asks me who's the greatest returner ever in the men's game, I would instantly say Andre Agassi, closely followed by Jimmy Connors and Novak Djokovic. And the reason I would say that, I'm quite sure of this, is because everybody used to serve and volley.
Mm.
And if you... Mm. It's more spectacular. It's more spectacular to watch somebody return at somebody's feet or hit a clean winner return and... or then have to come up with a second passing shot or a lob. That's more spectacular to watch than it is watching a big serving baseliner belt a serve down and a guy, you know, just put the return back at your feet on the baseline.
I think that's a really good point.
So I'd love to watch Djokovic against proper serve volleyers. I'd love to watch that. Imagine watching him against Pete Sampras in his pomp.
Please, let's not get into intergenerational matchups at this hour or when it's our second podcast of the day.
Right, I'm just saying.
This is the chat we do when we have to fill on Prime.
It's just chat I do all the time.
Guaranteed, no definitive answers, chase your tail round in circles, chat.
It's called the tennis podcast. I feel like that's probably why... It just doesn't end up creating the kind of headlines that Agassi did. I mean, when Agassi won Wimbledon in 92 against the biggest servers and volleyers in the world on the fastest courts imaginable, that was such a shocking sight. But anyway, Djokovic has won. He now plays against Thiem on Tuesday, and Federer plays Berrettini, and the winner goes home, basically. The loser goes home in that match.
Yeah,
I mean, the winner might still go home.
Especially given that they both lost in straight sets. Mm. That's always a concern in these round robins. So yeah, it's Tuesday afternoon, Federer Berrettini, and Tuesday night, Djokovic Thiem already confirmed. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I suspect BBC TV, having not had Federer tonight, wanted to make sure they got him on Tuesday afternoon because they only get the afternoon sessions.
But then, of course, it's Djokovic Federer on Thursday.
Yeah, which will be... I mean, I just hope that is live.
Yeah, yeah, same.
Yes, I would like Roger Federer to beat Matteo Berrettini. No offence, Matteo. But I want Djokovic Federer to be a live match when that happens.
There is also an interesting potential situation with the number one being on the line, given that it is not completely in Djokovic's hands. He's obviously relying on Nadal losing. Now, I'm not saying at all that Djokovic would throw a match in order to finish second in the group and therefore face Nadal in the semis if Nadal were to top the group and kind of put that...
Back himself to beat Nadal rather than rely on someone else to do it.
It's an interesting psychological thing, I think, going on in this tournament that Djokovic... might think, well, if no one else wants to take out Nadal for me, I'm going to have to do it myself.
Oh my God, you've blown my mind.
But I need to do it before the final.
Catherine's open-mouthed.
Just putting that out there.
And I haven't quite got my head around it yet.
That's like, I mean, that is... Oh.
Do I need another beer to understand this? Get my head around it.
I want him to do that. I want him to think... I don't trust anyone to take this guy out. I'm going to do it.
Losers.
You know, I'm going to take my fate into my own hands.
Yeah. Exactly.
Throw myself on my sword.
Based on Federer's performance today, I wouldn't necessarily be trusting him. He might not be through. Team, would you trust Team to beat Nadal? Maybe,
no.
But you'd trust Djokovic more.
Fascinating.
Right. But okay. Nadal needs to get out of his group first.
On that subject.
No, needs to be able to serve. Yes.
And on that subject, still well, TBC. I think this is a massive problem. He plays Zverev tomorrow night, Nadal. Yes, we've seen him in practice. I think most of the reports from the pundits you've got at Prime, Catherine, seem to feel like he was serving all right, I think.
Yeah. He was serving full pelt today and yesterday. I think more today than yesterday. We don't know what it's taking out of him. We don't know how he feels.
I'd be very pleasantly surprised if he comes through these three group matches unscathed.
He's never lost to Zverev.
I just feel like abdominal
injury.
Yeah,
I think he's losing to one of... He's losing to one of them, isn't he?
I don't know whether he gets through these matches. I just... That is such a difficult injury.
What's not a difficult injury?
No, but if it's not...
Oh, we've had this collarbone.
Yeah, but come on.
No, but like legit tennis injury.
But that... To serve with a dodgy abdominal muscle, I don't know how you get through matches without it going, unless that is 100% healed.
Yeah, I agree. But maybe it's 100% healed.
Well,
I don't know.
If it is, then, you know, he should just say that and not make a fool of me. Anyway, he's playing Zverev tomorrow night. What do we think? He's never lost to Zverev, you're saying.
5-0.
You were saying, sorry,
Catherine.
I actually produced a stat there, David.
Just default, sorry.
Once at a blue moon.
Where'd you get the stat? Did you look it up, or did you...
My mind. Might not be as cavernous as Matt's, but just, it's there.
It was just there.
Has its odd moments.
Yeah. Well, she was on fire today on the television presenting front. But anyway, so you feel like...
Niche today was actually identifying the music being played by the excellent DJ.
Yes, you were. You did say you were referencing the names of these bands that were playing, and I didn't know who any of them were.
It was a really eclectic mix of just excellent bangers.
Right.
Well, you told me there was Bruce.
There was Bruce. Yeah.
Slightly depressing.
I tried.
Slightly
to
depressing.
In my excitement, I fumbled in my attempts to record a voice message. Providing evidence that Bruce had infiltrated the O2 Arena, but you just have to take my word for it.
Oh, I do.
Catherine and Matt are my popular culture guides in life.
He's got notes, guys, on this.
And I should say that...
David is producing notes.
I have got four episodes through succession now, and Mike Taylor has got in touch on Twitter and said, it's not even close between Succession and Boston Legal. Succession is the TV the cockroaches will watch to explain why they're the only ones left.
The people like Coldplay and voted for the Nazis. You can't trust people. That's a quote from something, guys. It's not. It's a quote. It's a Peep Show quote.
Okay, it's a Peep Show quote. Everybody.
Watch Peep Show.
Right. Okay.
And if people tell you that's something the cockroaches watch, then just bog off everyone.
No, I think he's on your side.
No, he's not.
I think he is, yeah.
He's calling me a cockroach.
No, he's not. He's not calling you a cockroach.
Is he saying that it will last forever?
Yeah, he's saying that the only thing left for the cockroaches will be Succession because it's the only thing worth keeping.
That is a sophisticated compliment.
Succession in years and years.
As it turns out, there are two ways of reading that quote.
Which kind of sum up Catherine and my various outlooks on life.
Yeah.
So where were we? Zverev against Nadal tomorrow. What's happening?
Well, obviously, if Nadal's fit, Nadal wins. If Nadal's not fit, I think Zverev will win. So.
Yeah, I would agree.
Okay, what about the other one? Tsitsipas against Medvedev.
Also 5-0.
Awesome.
Yeah.
To Medvedev.
Oh, wow.
Interesting, just very quickly going back to Zverev Nadal, interesting quotes from Zverev in the Sunday Times today, talking about the match that he played against Nadal in
Indian Wells.
Indian Wells when he was 18, which would have been, what, 5 years ago, that volley that he missed.
Oh, yeah, I remember
yeah.
that.
On match, was it on match point?
On match point, and he said he still thinks about it a lot. Which I found an interesting admission from Zverev, who doesn't show us that much vulnerability very often.
He's actually played okay against Nadal. He had obviously had match point there. He took him to five in Australia once.
Yeah, that was very close.
The Rome final last year, Nadal was saved by the rain. Zverev was taking him on the clay, but Zverev's not that player really. He hasn't been this year.
It's going to be interesting to see which player turns up tomorrow, isn't it?
Whereas Nadal, if he's fit, he's barely lost a match since June.
And he hasn't gone worse than a semi-final apart from once all year, hasn't he?
Yeah,
it was only Acapulco.
Right. Acapulco, Kyrgios. So if Nadal's fit, the kind of rule is that he wins. So I would, I'm sticking with that.
Okay. Medvedev, Tsitsipas. I think you've got to go Medvedev at the moment, haven't you? Not on this surface. I think this will suit him down to the ground.
And can you imagine Tsitsipas's press conference if he loses again to Medvedev? Can you imagine the despair and...
How much are we offering to donate to charity?
On the subject of...
No one's pulled him up on that, have they?
No, I don't think
so. On the subject of press conferences, how quickly did Roger Federer come into his press conference tonight? I mean, I was busy in the commentary box, and there's a sort of WhatsApp group to let everybody know when the press conferences are, and it came through, Roger Federer in press conference in 10 o'clock. Looked at my watch, it's 9:58.
Yeah.
And so we've got 2 minutes, and it's not possible to get from the commentary box to the press conference room in 2 minutes. Where were you, Matt? You were in the gods.
Yeah, I was trying to get to the lift, and I wasn't even in the lift, and he was already in press. Yeah. And someone, a journalist, said that he was in Cincinnati earlier this year when he lost to Rublev, and Federer was in press when Rublev was still doing the encore interview.
I mean, and this does happen sometimes with certain players. When they lose, they just want to get it out of the way, and they'll come off the court.
It increasingly happens with Federer.
Yeah, they'll come off the court, somebody will say to them, how long do you need before the press, and they'll just go, I'll come now.
And
you know, and yeah,
I'm still torn on whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. I think you do get a more honest, perhaps immediate raw reaction, but equally they've not really reflected, and sometimes they don't give that insightful answers. I think you get a good glimpse into their mindset and how pissed off they are.
I prefer that.
Okay.
I like the raw immediacy and no chance to spin it or media train it or anything. No. So there we are.
It's just here for the aggro, folks.
Yeah.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Right.
Do you get it in Medvedev Tsitsipas tomorrow? I think that rivalry needs to get closer for the aggro to catch fire again. It's difficult to have aggro if it's just a really one-sided. I mean, Tsitsipas can't give it to Medvedev.
I think
he's 6-0 in the
head-to-head. We're getting a good match tomorrow, though.
Yeah,
there
I think
go.
So.
We're getting a good close match. Tsitsipas is going to bring it tomorrow.
Lots of their matches have been quite close, and Medvedev's just managed to sneak the win.
Let's just give the doubles results here as well. Lucas Kubot and Marcelo Melo won against Dodik and Polasek, 10-5 in the third. Dodik,
they were pumped.
Dodik was
Kubot
going
and Melo.
Nuts at the umpire about something.
It was, yeah. We were watching on mute, weren't we, David? But yes. I still feel like we could hear it.
Kubot did a sort of can-can style victory celebration, which genuinely made me worry about him doing himself an injury.
Hamstring going.
Yeah, it looked ropey.
Oh dear.
That is his celebration.
Is it?
Yeah. Wasn't there a year when he rather randomly got to the Wimbledon quarterfinals? In singles.
Flow coming on.
In singles, yes.
Yeah, I feel like he lost to Marcelo
Melo.
No, Kubot.
Kubot? Mm. Oh, yes, he did, yeah.
Used to lose to Janovic?
Yes, that rings a bell.
In the year... Was it the year Marin
won? Yes. Allow me to remind myself of the Kubot-Janovic head-to-head, which is definitely in the recesses of my mind somewhere. Stop making his look bad, Matt.
Yeah, but all I'm saying
his idea wasn't to invite him on the podcast
all
anyway.
All I'm saying is I've seen that celebration before.
Right, okay, well, great for you. Delighted for you. Talking of umpires, we met Lars Graf today, didn't we?
You chased him around the O2.
He's a Tennis Podcast listener.
It's one of my best ever moments. We had a very nice chat with him, and Ali Nilly was there.
Yeah.
And...
Weller Evans, who's former tour manager and board member.
Yes. So we had a nice chat.
And well, then, everything's normal at this stage.
Everything was normal. He was saying how he likes the podcast. And then we said bye.
Normal.
And then David said, we should have got a picture. Turn round. Lars Graf, quite a quick walker, had 30 yards in the distance. And David started running after him.
I was imagining I was chasing a Matt Roberts drop shot.
He gave me grief about my predictions. He gave me shit.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up.
Oh,
I'm
damn.
I'm on quite a good run, aren't I? Moment.
Yeah, he is.
How did you not predict Yannick Sinner to win the next gen finals?
Well, before we get onto that, let's just remind ourselves.
Ash Barty related predictions is David's thing.
That's true. Yeah. Ash Barty French Open champion or Grand Slam champion. Ash Barty WTA finals champion, tick. And France to beat Australia with Ash Barty's heart being broken, tick. So
your loss, Ash, is David Law's gain,
which is
on
all
this
that
particular
matters,
occasion.
Really. So anyway, Ravan Klaassen and Michael Venus
beat Salisbury Ram.
Yeah, 6-3, 6-4. And so tomorrow we've got in the doubles. We've got Salisbury's up. No, that can't.
It's
that's
the
wrong
night
day.
Session doubles is the one that I'm
looking at.
Oh, yes. I'm very much here for. Mm.
Hold on a minute. Let me do
Alan
this one
Farrow
first.
Against Hébert Mahut, 6 p.m. prime.
Yes.
Tune in.
Yeah, before that,
I'll try not to cry.
Kravets and Mies against Roger and Takao at 12. Then it's Medvedev Tsitsipas. Then it's Cabal Farah against Hébert Mahut. I wonder if the kid's here. And then Nadal Zverev. So.
Simon Briggs has been playing with Mahut.
Yeah.
I had dinner with him.
An undignified
t
shirt.
He was at the. There was a media were invited. Some media. Not this media. Were invited for a hit with the doubles players, and Simon was hitting with Mahut, he said.
Right. Can Mahut have a word about the green shirt? Because
it was bright.
That thing is not...
It's hopefully in the bin.
not cutting it. Yannick Sinner. Let's talk about Yannick Sinner before we depart, because he's won the next-gen finals, 18 years of age. He's thrashed everybody, and he's beaten Alex de Minaur in the final. And... it was spectacular. It was really something. I mean, I've Heard a lot about him over the course of the year. Oh, it's going to close at 11:30. Yeah, all right, fine. Well, we're going. So Yannick Sinner was brilliant, but he was more spectacular than I was expecting. I mean, if you haven't seen this guy play, he's a strapping lad. He's red-haired. He's quite a striking lad to look at because you don't see many pale, red-haired chaps on the tennis circuit playing like that.
I'm going to just get in there with my Yannick Sinner fact before Matt outshines me with lots more facts, because this is all I've got. He's from the little bit of Italy where German is his first language, much like Andrea Seppi.
Oh, right. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Like that.
There's a little bit in the north.
Not the comparison he was hoping for, I think.
Andrea Seppi, good player, not prodigy, which Yannick Sinner appears to be.
What struck me watching that was how much the fast four, is it, format suited him down to the ground, because he is someone who plays first strike tennis. He was all over de Menor's second serve in particular. I think they brought up a graphic that there was a 35-kilometre discrepancy in the pace of their returns of serve, which is huge. That is a huge difference. But de Menor was unable to kind of make it a battle, which is kind of what he's all about, and make it physical and a grind. The sudden death deuce, the first to four, just doesn't allow him to do that. So my one caveat would be that this really did suit Yannick Sinner.
Yeah, I agree.
But people, you know, Chung and Tsitsipas both then transferred the next-gen success immediately to the following season by reaching the Australian Open semi-finals.
We had a debate about what we think his future is going to be, because, I mean, this kid looks like he's got the goods to be a significant figure over the next year or two. You compared him to Andreescu.
Well, I put it out there. I said, could this guy be ATP Andreescu? Not, I didn't really mean in terms of winning a slam in the next year. What I kind of thought was kind of a little bit out of nowhere. People haven't really seen much of him make a big impact in a year and get in the top 20, top 10. Is that possible? Because we've not really seen that in the men's game. Because he's not really played a lot of juniors, Sinner, so people don't really know that much about him.
The last two next-gen finals champions went on to reach the Australian Open semi-finals in the subsequent Aussie Open.
Yeah.
I mean,
you just said that.
Oh, yeah, possibly. I was googling the region of Italy.
Good one,
South,
there, Catherine.
South Tyrol. I've got something else if you want it.
Yeah.
I'm now on a slightly dubious website, which is telling me five facts that you never realised you needed to know about Yannick Sinner.
Does it say
one is that
click
he's
here.
Trilingual? Two right. is. He was a high-level skier before he was a tennis player. I think we all know that. Videos are available. Number three, won three titles in a row in February and March on the Challenger circuit. Four, he has a flat forehand, a blistering turn of backhand, and a deft drop volley. Number five is my favourite, though. He's a fan of Prison Break, pizza, sushi, AC Milan, and Eminem. So it appears that he's sort of living in 2002.
Why do you look at me
Which
when I say
Which might actually
that?
Be before he was born. Right. Prison Break and Eminem.
Oh.
What?
I do have a good
Nothing wrong
fact.
With Eminem.
So the Next Gen Finals moved arena this year. It used to be played in a kind of exhibition centre. Now it was in a kind of proper stadium. And it was the stadium where Federer won his first title in Milan 18 years ago. Sinner is 18. He was not born when Federer won his first title. But he's won his first, in a way. I don't think they really count it, do they, the next gen?
Have you noticed the way
same stadium.
Everybody is trying to say who Yannick Sinner reminds them of? He's the new such and such.
I said he reminded me of Rublev, who's also next gen. He's the new Rublev.
But I think
Rublev's the new Rublev.
I've got one.
Oh.
Rory McIlroy. Ah. He reminds me of Rory McIlroy. Sort of, you know, cheeky chappy with an
good.
Absolute dynamite of strike of a ball.
Mm.
Catherine's scrunching
quite a lot of hair.
Yeah, What's that face for?
Did you write that headline that said that Zverev was the new Bjorn Borg?
No, I didn't.
Because they got the same hair.
Right, and on that note, I think it's about time we went to bed for the night and finished our beers. We will be back with another one of these in the same place, no doubt, over the same beverage tomorrow night. Brought to you in association with The Telegraph, executive produced by tennisballs.com, and our mascot Rio with a Y. Tell your friends about the tennis podcast, because we've done two of them today, and that ain't happening again. But we'll do another one tomorrow, and leave us a review on iTunes. Sign up to our newsletter. There'll be one going out with a correct prediction from me in the next day or so, and we'll be back tomorrow.
You've predicted that your prediction will be correct.
Correct. And so it will be.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.